You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
All right, juror number 48, welcome back to the courtroom. We're going to conduct some additional individual voir dire with you. At this time, I'm going to have some questions related to your questionnaire responses, and I'll start there, noting that we are in the process of obtaining jurors who are impartial without any knowledge of the case, which would impact your ability to be fair and fully consider only the evidence here presented at trial. So in response to your questionnaire on page 15, the question was, well, you indicated you followed the cases in the media. There's a question, has that caused you to already form an opinion regarding the guilt or innocence of Chad Guy Daybell in this case? Your answer was yes. If he didn't participate, then he did nothing to prevent what happened. And so I guess beginning there, I'd just like to inquire, do you believe you've already formed some type of opinion potentially regarding the guilt of the defendant here?
Yes.
And would your opinion be different than presumed innocent at this point?
Presumed is the word where I get hung up.
And I guess what I'm wondering is, would you think that you're going to require some evidence to maybe overcome the opinion you've already made?
Yes.
And is the opinion you've made one that you believe the defendant maybe or is guilty?
You're asking if that's my opinion?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's my opinion.
All right. Briefly then, I think there's a bias here very concerning, but if the state would like to ask any follow-up questions, I'll begin there and then see if the defense wishes to as well.
Thank you, Your Honor. I do have a few follow-up questions.
Okay.
Juror 48, you filled out this questionnaire last week. Right. Is that right?
Yes.
And I know there's a lot of questions on it. It's a lengthy questionnaire. And some of the questions you may have noticed kind of restate or ask for some of the same information. I noticed when you filled this out, you indicated that you have served on a jury before.
Yes.
And do you recall that experience?
Yes.
And it was a little bit different because it was a civil case.
Correct.
Do you feel that you were able to carry out your duties in that, on that
yes.
jury? And on this questionnaire, I also noticed there's a section, and you might recall it, and I think they gave you your questionnaire, and I believe it's page 11. It had a 1 to 5 rating system. And 1 was strongly agree, 2 was agree. And there's quite a few of them, but I notice on there that when it said, I would review all the evidence before I make a decision in this case, you'd indicated a 2 for agree. And I would listen to all the evidence before I make a decision. You also had done a 2 for agree. Would that still be accurate today that you feel you would listen and review all the evidence before making a final decision?
Yes. I should state, I'm naturally very curious and analytical to a fault. So,
no, that is fair. And I appreciate that information. And then we've gotten down to the section that the judge was going over with you on the media. And you did indicate that you have seen some media on this and you've talked to some people from out of state. But I also noted when the question came up of, do you have any knowledge of Chad Daybell that would keep you from acting impartially? You'd indicated no. On knowledge of, do you have any knowledge of Chad Daybell that would cause you to give either greater or lesser weight to any statement? You'd also indicated no. Would those still be accurate today?
Still accurate.
And then I think where the judge had talked about was there was a question if you'd formed an opinion of guilt or innocence, and your response was yes, if he didn't participate, then he did nothing to prevent what happened. But then it went on to ask you, would you be able to put out of your mind what you have read or heard and act impartial? And you indicated that you could put it out of your mind. And I know the judge just asked you today if you've got this presumption of guilt, but we also had talked about earlier in voir dire the recipient being given instructions. If you were given an instruction to put out of your mind anything you'd heard before and only weigh the evidence and information presented in this trial, in this case, do you feel that you would be able to do that?
Yes, I could.
Your Honor, given that, the state would ask to have him remain on.
Okay. Let me ask the defense at this point, Board Dyer, Mr. Pryor, on the issue of bias.
And so again, I think when I spoke to all of you, I told you there's nobody in the bias. We're all absolutely entitled. You would agree, right?
Agreed.
And as an analytical person, based on the information you have at the present time, you're going into the situation with some concerns about this case, correct?
I wouldn't use the word concern. Sorry.
No, that's okay. What word would you use?
Did you turn on your microphone, Ms. Pryor?
I did, Judge. Now, again, technologically inept.
Yeah, no, as I stated, I read every day. I do have an opinion. I did try to be as honest as, and to the point as I can be. So I'm not concerned. Just neutral is the best word, other than I do have an opinion.
Okay. And as part of that opinion, the questionnaire, and I'm looking at page 19, and it's about the middle of the questionnaire, and it says under item D, has any of your possible exposure to news reporting, dramatized depictions, or other publicity around the case form an opinion about Chad Daigle's guilt or innocence? And you said yes. And then you responded, I believe that Chad Daigle is a weak character.
Yes.
So when the judge inquired of you that whether or not you formed an opinion, and the prosecutor touched on this a little bit, you answered the judge's questions, and I have absolute belief you're being completely honest. And at this point, Judge, I have the belief that not only is he a weak character, but I tend to believe that he may be guilty. But I'll go and I'll review all the evidence before I make that final determination. Is that fair?
Fair.
And is it fair to say that before you make that final determination, right now, you're saying, listen, I'm leaning towards the fact that I probably believe that he's guilty. But before, again, I make that final determination, I'm going to give both sides a chance. But at this point, he's a weak character, and I think he's probably guilty. Would that be a fair statement?
Almost.
Okay, please clarify that for me then.
Well, I would have to hear the instructions from the court.
Okay.
To define guilt and the charges.
Okay, but at this point, your position is the weak character and guilty, but I'm going to listen to the instructions, and I'm going to look at all the evidence. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Thank you, Judge. I have nothing else. I'm going to move for pause, Judge.
All right. Considered the strike for cause request made by the defense as to juror number 48, juror number 48. This is precisely the reason we have this individual section of questioning, so we can discuss this frankly with you without the other jurors' presence there. The court, having considered the responses here and concerned there's been a improper shifting of the burden that's afforded to the defendant on a presumption of innocence based on pretrial publicity in this case with this particular juror, for that reason, I am going to grant the motion to strike. So juror number 48, that will conclude your jury service, and we appreciate you coming in today and taking your time as well as last week. You can be excused with the thanks of the court. Please leave your questionnaire with the bailiff, and we'll have our next juror brought in for questioning. All right, I believe next up will be juror 56. All right, thank you for returning. This is juror number 56. At this time, we're going to conduct individual voir dire, beginning with the issue of potential bias. There wasn't really expressed anything in here relating to hardship, so let's start there. Let me just ask juror number 56, you've been provided a copy of the questionnaire you completed last week. To your best of your recollection, are all of your responses in there still accurate and true today?
Yes.
Okay. I'll let the state inquire first as it relates to any potential bias here, then we'll move on to the defense. This is going for the state this time.
I will, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Wood.
Thank you, juror 56. Thank you for being here. Notice on page 7 of your questionnaire, you have a bachelor's degree in religion.
Yes.
So this case does have some religious elements involved in. Are you, if the defendant has religious beliefs different than you, is that going to sway your opinion in any way?
No.
Okay. You can commit to that, that you're not going to judge him based on religious beliefs.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. I can commit to that.
It looked like in your questionnaire, you have some news from, I think you say, Idaho News Apps and CNN. How much news have you seen in regards to this case?
That's hard to quantify. I have seen like articles here and there from the case. I don't watch the news. And I don't get on news apps regularly, so I recall seeing something about it pretty early on. I recall seeing something about the arrest in Hawaii. I recall seeing something about the search for the children's bodies, but I make it a point to avoid the news, and so it's not something that I do on a regular basis. And I certainly didn't follow any cases intentionally.
And so it's fair to say, in this case, you have not actively followed the news in the case.
Correct.
I did want to speak with you about one of your responses on page 19. It's in response to question 10F, and the question is, if you form any personal opinions whatsoever based on information from any source of Chad Daybell's guilt or innocence of anything. And you said, I do recall a sense of, quote, he probably did it, unquote. Tell us about that. How deep of a conviction is that?
It's certainly not a deep conviction. I do, that was my brutal honesty. I do recall that. I don't recall what it was that brought that sense. I think that was just a probably happened and then moved on. That's certainly something that I can actively set aside, practicing neutrality.
So, yeah, I didn't notice in 10E, when it asks if you're able to put what you do know about the case out of your mind and render an impartial verdict based solely upon the evidence in the courtroom, you said yes, and you say, I believe so. So we talked earlier about lining up.
Right.
Like, it is, can you commit completely that you will set aside anything you've known about this case and render that impartial verdict?
Yes, I believe I can. I believe it would be a degrading practice of, bringing yourself to kind of recommitting that every day to keeping your focus on the evidence before you. And I think that bias is something that it's easy to say you don't have, but it's like rarely the case that somebody doesn't have some sort of bias. And so I see it professionally as well as something that I intentionally practice on a daily basis is maintaining neutrality.
And you do understand that this defendant doesn't have to prove anything to you, correct?
Correct.
And that it's completely the burden of the state to prove his guilt. No further questions, Your Honor.
All right. On that topic, then, Mr. Pryor.
Yes. And, ma'am, you mentioned your occupation going off every other bit, but it's a forensic interviewer, if I remember correctly.
That's correct.
Is that what it is? And you work with the program of young children who've had troubling issues, and you interview them to make assessments.
That's correct. And well, can I clarify that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. It's correct that I interview young children. However, it's not my job to form an assessment of any sort. I simply report what was disclosed to me
in more of a law enforcement capacity. It's not necessarily law enforcement, but in terms of what law enforcement should be doing, rather than taking a position, you're just reporting facts. Would that be fair?
Right, and for medical purposes.
Okay. And obviously, one of the concerns that came up to me, flagged this a little bit. And again, I think I spoke to you folks before and said there's no wrong answer, there's no right answer. There isn't. We're just all trying to, and it's a horrible thing to have to go through this. But one of the concerns I have is that two of the victims are children. And when I read your profile, I assumed that you would suggest you seem very analytical. And when I realized you're a forensic interviewer, I realized, oh, that's why it's very analytical. One of the concerns I have is that I'm not always able to discipline myself to stay focused on the task at hand. And when you say it's going to be a struggle or it's going to have to be something I'm going to have to work on every day to not allow that bias to creep in, what that's kind of telling me, and then if I'm being honest with myself, I agree with you, it's a struggle. And when you have bias or you feel like you've already made a decision, it can be difficult when you're going into a matter saying, listen, yes, I believe this is what happened here. I believe this is what's going on. And that's really what you said, if we're being fair, correct?
Sorry.
That's okay.
What part were you saying that
I said? Well, forming an opinion, he probably did it. You formed the opinion, and you said, yes, I have formed an opinion. And that's fair, correct?
I wouldn't call that forming an opinion. It was a kind of a fleeting thought at the time that I recall having when I first saw the news. But it's not something that I've formulated. It's not something I've pondered or thought about or you know, followed.
And that's why we're talking about this, because I want to make sure that at the present time, you haven't formed an opinion about whether there's guilt or innocence here, correct?
No, I certainly have not. And it's extremely important to me personally and to in my profession to remain neutral until you do have evidence before you. So when I say that it's a daily practice, it's not because it's a struggle. It's because it's a proactive practice of neutrality. It's because neutrality is so important that I come to it every day and, you know, before every interview and consider, you know, the potentials on both sides.
Okay. And you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to explain that because it sort of explains your answers and gives me the opportunity to hear it from you when you're saying, listen, this is really what I mean by this, because you can imagine you get a piece of paper blanks that you're crossing off. And I imagine you've been through the same thing and say, wait a minute, this doesn't really explain how I feel about it. But here today, I think I have a better understanding. I want to thank you. I appreciate that you've taken the time to educate me. Judge, that's all I have. Thank you, Ron.
All right, thank you. Next issue I'll get into with juror number 56 here then is going to be on the section of your questionnaire you filled out on page 12 called the attitudes regarding the death penalty. Juror 56, do you recall filling out those responses in the questionnaire?
I do.
Okay, and are those still true and accurate to the best of your knowledge?
They are.
I did want to just take a look at a couple of responses again. We're just trying to ascertain for sure your opinions here. On a question, do you support or oppose the death penalty, you check the box support. I notice on the general attitudes part, which gave you some multiple choice, pick the one you like best, you said you were generally opposed to the death penalty. So in answering that question, would you would you say you support or oppose, or is it a more complicated answer than that for you?
I do think it's more complicated. I kind of noticed that this on number six, that the answers were sort of organized in a spectrum. And I just felt that the one above, I generally favor the death penalty, was not accurate. That gave me the sense of, oh, in a lot of cases, I would favor the death penalty. And that's certainly not the case. And that's why I chose D over C.
All right. Well, I am going to advise you that it may be necessary for you to make a determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty in this case. So with that in mind, if you are generally opposed to it, going back to your response, Part D, and again, this is somebody else's statement, not yours, but you agreed with this, as you mentioned, on the spectrum answer. I am generally opposed to the death penalty, but I believe I can put aside my feelings against the death penalty and impose it if it is called for by the facts, law, and instructions in the case. So do you still think that best represents your position on the death penalty?
I think it does. I guess the way I'm reading it, I should just clarify, when I was thinking I generally favor the death penalty, I was thinking about that broadly in a lot of different cases. If I were to think about it more narrowly, just because I'm not well versed in the law around the death penalty, I don't know when it's even a possibility in a case. I assume that it's only on the table in more extreme cases. So I think that's why I wasn't sure how to answer. If the death penalty were on the table in a great variety of cases, then I would continue to be opposed to it in general. But if it's used sparingly and for more extreme crimes, then I would be in support.
Okay. The question I will have then is this. If I were to instruct you in this case that you are to consider the death penalty, will you be able to follow my instructions and consider the penalty of death?
Sure.
All right, so are you representing here that you would be able to set aside your own views and follow that law and instruction if it were provided to you in this case?
Yes.
Okay, that will conclude the court's voir dire portion of that for this juror. I'll allow the state any follow-up questions.
Thank you, Your Honor. The state doesn't have any follow-up questions.
All right, from the defense.
And ma'am, you mentioned use sparingly. Could you clarify that a little bit? What do you mean by use sparingly?
I think I wrote in the previous questions that I don't know data on it, but I'm aware that Idaho hasn't executed a meat in a very long time. So I would consider that pretty sparingly used.
Okay, and when you made the comment that extreme cases, does that mean that in a situation where, and nothing I say isn't to imply that Mr. Daybell's guilty, right? We're talking about this because we have to. But if the death penalty is one of the options in a murder case like this, does that mean if you find Mr. Daybell guilty, does that immediately mean you go to the death penalty and that will be your vote? Does that mean how you support it, or is it different?
No, I just meant that I certainly, those are two very separate decisions. I just meant in extreme cases, such as in regard to the crime itself. Obviously, I wouldn't support the death penalty for a burglary case.
Right. But does it mean that your vote would automatically be the death penalty if someone was convicted of murder?
No, those are very different decisions to me.
Right. And when you say extreme cases, you know, you've heard the name Jeffrey Dahmer.
I have.
Serial killer. That's an extreme case, right?
I would, when I say extreme, I'm referring to murder.
Okay. So murder in general is an extreme case.
Yes.
And again, and that is your vote on it? On
no, let me, sorry, let me clarify. Murder happens in so many different ways and so many different, you know, circumstances that I'm not saying that in all murder cases, I think the death penalty would be appropriate.
Okay.
But I am saying that I would support it being considered.
That's where I was trying to get you at, is I was trying to clarify your position a little bit. And again, I want to repeat, there's no right or wrong answer. I'm just trying to understand. And again, in this context, you've clarified a number of your positions. You said, well, this is why I clarified that. And that's why we do this. The court is kind enough to allow us to go through this because we're trying to clarify it. If I understand your position, and please correct me, is that just because there's a murder doesn't automatically mean it's going to be the death penalty. If there's a murder, I'm going to look at the facts. I'm going to look at whatever evidence and make a determination based on what the court tells me are my options in that case. Would that be fair?
Yes.
So, and please forgive me, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. That sounds like a very neutral position. Would it be fair that you're very neutral on the death penalty?
I think so. I think that's why I struggled in picking between C and D on number six.
Okay. And that's what I was trying to clarify. I was just trying to understand it. And I appreciate that you're going through this. I really do. And thank you for all of your answers. Judge, that's all I have. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. Juror 5-6, then, that concludes the voir dire portion individually. You can go ahead and I'll have the bailiff escort you back to the jury room. And we will follow up our next juror for individual questioning, juror number 141. At some point, counsel will talk about scheduling, but I do want to get through this group of individual voir dire with the next, and then we'll discuss where we stand because we've got another group meet up coming here in 15 minutes, and I presume everybody probably needs some lunch. All right, thank you for returning, juror number 121. This is the time we're going to conduct some individual voir dire examination, beginning with the issue of bias. We've also got a request you had on here regarding a potential hardship, but let's start with the questions of bias. I'll have a few questions, and then I'll allow the state and the defense. In particular, it appears you've been exposed to some pretrial publicity on this case. You may have some opinion at this point regarding the guilt or innocence of the defendant, in this case, Mr. Daybell. So just to begin, are the responses you put in your questionnaire still true and accurate?
Yes.
Okay. I'd note you answered one question about whether you formed an opinion, and you said, quote, it seemed like he was guilty from that info. And then on another page, you also said, I did think that he was guilty. I'd like to just go into those topics with you if I could. Is that still the way you feel today?
Yes.
Okay, as you sit here today, we instruct every juror in every case that a defendant is presumed innocent and only to be tried on the facts of the case. Am I correct in understanding that you, based on information you already know, maybe do not believe the defendant is innocent as he sits here today?
Well, I don't know. I feel like more what I was saying on the questionnaire was that obviously I never thought that I would be on this jury, so I was more, you know, reading an article and then just being like, oh, dang. But I feel like through our conversation today, I do understand that you would have to be impartial.
Okay. I will allow the state to conduct some more dire on that issue of bias then, and then we'll allow the defense as well. So who will be doing this one for the state?
That would be me, Your Honor.
Okay, Ms. Beatty, go ahead.
Thank you. Hi. So you had mentioned in your questionnaire that you had read articles that detailed the alleged crimes in this case, and you were aware of when the bodies of the two children were found, and that at some time you learned about Tamara Daybell as well.
Yes.
And as the judge mentioned, you concluded from reading those articles that he seemed guilty at the time. And I think you also indicated on your questionnaire that you think that you could set that aside.
I think so, yeah.
Are you sure?
Yes, I think that I understand the responsibility.
Okay. Do you think that you would be able to, because our system requires that all of our jurors go into this trial believing that the defendant, as he sits here today, is innocent until we, the prosecutors, meet our burden of proof, can you commit to setting that aside, or are you kind of on the fence, like, oh, I'll try, or I'll do my best? Are you able to get some certainty that you can set that aside?
I feel like it's hard because I think I could, if it was given the situation where I had to do this, I do think that I could be fair.
Okay. I also just want to ask you briefly about one other thing that you referenced on your questionnaire, which was a golf tournament that you're helping plan for work.
Yeah.
And that was on May 3rd.
Yes.
Is that something that somebody else at your work could take over those responsibilities for you, or that you would be able to do after court on that schedule outlined in the questionnaire where we recess at 3:30 every day?
Yeah, I'm like the fundraising person for my job. So it's not like I have a department. So like I would be the one planning this. I think I could do the planning, but it would be very difficult the day of to not have me there. That being said, I think that I could probably rearrange to find someone.
And when you say the day of, is that on a weekend or is that on a weekday?
On a Friday. On a Friday. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I don't have any other questions at this time. Thank you.
All right. On the topics then of bias or hardship, Mr. Pryor, you can inquire.
It's afternoon now, isn't it? You're the marketing director, is that right?
Yes.
Significant job. What caused me some hesitation, and that, again, there's no wrong answer. I think I spoke to you folks about that earlier. There's no wrong answer. I'm sorry. Can you hear me now? I'm sorry. There's no wrong answer. I'm a little concerned about you being distracted when a week before May 3rd, a week after May 3rd, on May 3rd, which is a Friday, and that your focus is going to be other things, and you could understand the magnitude. You put that on your questionnaire because it's a significant event. And would you agree with me that this would be a hardship for you to have to be here and go through this process? And you may not be able to push that out of your head. It might be problematic. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
So in your mind, it's going to be a hardship for you to serve, knowing these activities that you're primarily responsible for.
Yes.
And this isn't I'm very familiar with your organization. I won't get into that, but it's not like heavily staffed.
No, I'm the only person that does my job. So I would have to be like looking after it.
So. Right, and that's going to be a distraction in itself. Is that fair?
Sure, yeah.
And then again, there is no wrong answer. Everybody has a right to the opinion. I have an opinion. These four prosecutors apparently have an opinion. And you have an opinion. And when you said, I did think he was guilty, it's going to be a task for you to say, listen, you know where I'm going. Yes, it's going to be a task for you to say, I've got to look beyond that. And I've got to remind myself regularly that he's not guilty, and try to make a concerted effort in your own mind to look at the evidence impartially and without bias. It's not going to be just, you're not starting the slate with that. You're starting the slate with a mindset that, listen, I unfortunately, I think he's guilty. And then I have to talk about this. We have to talk about this because it's part of the process. I don't think Mr. Daybell's guilty, and Mr. Daybell's here saying he's not. But in your mind, you're going to have to make an effort to look beyond your personal feelings and focus on trying to be unbiased, try to be impartial. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Judge, I'm going to move for cause. And again, this is nothing personal or anything else. I just think that she has a hardship that she's going to need to focus on, and that her opinion, although it's important, it just doesn't fit in this particular situation.
Response from the state on the request to strike.
Your Honor, we have no objection to excusing this juror.
All right, juror number 121, mainly on an issue of, I think, some preconceived bias here. And again, nothing personal. We all are entitled to follow the news and think what we think about it. But in this particular case, it would be best to have jurors without that exposure if possible, which is why we brought so many people through here as well. I am going to grant the motion for striking juror 121 for cause. That concludes your service. Thank you for coming in, and please leave your questionnaire. We'll next talk to juror 146. All right, you're juror 146, correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, in this case, on juror 146, looking at the questionnaire, there was some indication of case knowledge there, so I think you need to explore whether there's any preconceived bias in the case by this juror. I don't see any listing of hardships, so if the state would like to inquire on bias, we can start there.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Ma'am, I just have a few questions for you today, so I know my voice. I understood what the court just said, that the use of the state of the hardships. I did have one quick question, because you did note that no, it wouldn't be a hardship to be on the jury, but you put it in a sense. I do have five kids. What did you mean by that?
I have five kids. I think I was more referring to the sequestering card, if that ever had happened, that I would just like to be able to check on my kids. No, at the end of the day, that's something that happened.
Okay, so your kids are a sufficient age that you could potentially serve for 10 weeks, it wouldn't be a burden.
Try not to talk at the same time as each other so we get a clear record.
Thank you, ma'am. And then I noticed, I believe in your questionnaire, when I asked if you had information about the case, I think you noticed maybe some information from Facebook. Am I recalling that correctly?
Yeah, just seeing things on Facebook over the last couple of years.
Without getting into all the details of what you've learned about the case, how much information would you say gauge that you have? A little bit of information? Do you feel like you know a bit? How much information do you feel like you've collected about it?
I don't know very much. Just in passing. It's not like I've researched or anything.
So there would be no reason to think that whatever you've learned would impact your ability to be impartial, to listen to the evidence in the case?
Absolutely.
And then one last question on this topic. If I recall correctly from your questionnaire, you work as a daycare worker. Mm-hmm. Do you own the daycare?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't feel like there's anything about your day-to-day work with the children, understanding the allegations of children who were killed here, that's not going to do anything to cause you to be impartial?
No.
I'm sorry, a little less partial? On these kinds of questions, I don't have any other questions. Maybe later, though.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Rickson. Mr. Pryor.
And Mr. Wixom brought that up. It still always amazes me that someone can have five children and maintain even any kind of sane household. And then we know that in your situation, you have an entire scale of children. My recollection is it's a 4-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 13-year-old, a 16-year-old, and the last one's a 17-year-old. Two kids in high school, one in middle school, one in grade school, and one getting ready to start school. And then you are you're working a daycare as well, and your husband's a landscaper. Please forgive me. I don't even know how you can stay awake, let alone anything else. I that seems like an awful lot to me.
It is a lot, it's what I do.
And what the concern is that I'm worried that you may not be able to focus. You may not be able to spend the time, and that you're going to be worried about your children, and I'd be worried about my children too if I was in that situation.
If I was worried about my children, I wouldn't be here right now, and I would have said in the beginning, it's not something I'm comfortable doing.
Okay, and that's why we're talking about this. I don't want to there's no wrong answer. I just want to make sure how, because you when I saw what you go through, I'm amazed that you're able to do all of that. One of the concerns, and Mr. Wixom brought this up, is that the you said that every night, if you had to be sequestered, you would need to be able to get on your phone and talk to your children to make sure that they're okay every night.
Not necessarily talk to them, just, hey, everyone's home, everyone's good, hey, love you, bye.
So it would be a situation where you just need to have some confirmation. And let's say you were sequestered for 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Is that going to cause a hardship?
No.
So you would be able to focus on this?
Yeah.
Okay, and ma'am, I thank you. I appreciate the answers. And please understand, I have to ask this because I want to make sure that you're going to be able to focus on this. And this, I think, was a legitimate question. I think feel it was.
Yeah, I think so too.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate your answers.
All right. The next topic the court is going to address then here, juror 146. There was a section in your questionnaire, I'm sure you recall it, called Attitudes Regarding the Death Penalty. Do you remember working through that portion of the questionnaire and answering?
Yes.
Are the answers that you provided in that questionnaire still true and accurate today?
Yes.
All right. One thing I noted, well, I'll pass on that. It looks like you vacillated a little bit on do you support or oppose the death penalty. You said support, and then you also kind of checked opposed and said depends on the crime. So there was another response you had, and it was one that was on a list of choices, but it said, I generally favor the death penalty, but I would base a decision to impose it on the facts, law, and instructions in the case. Is that still the way you feel today?
It is.
Okay. The court does need to advise you that it may be necessary for you to make a determination in this case in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty. So with that comment you just made, and you've indicated you would, in fact, follow the instructions provided by this court if that were required in this case. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Do you feel like you would always be in favor of the death penalty in every case where a murder was committed?
Yeah.
All right. So regardless of your current personal beliefs on the topic, is it correct for me to say that with your views on the death penalty, you would be willing to follow the court's instructions in this case, even if it involved an instruction that you consider that as a possible penalty here?
Yes.
All right, that concludes the court's line of questioning on that section. Was the state going to inquire?
All right, do you just have a couple of questions?
Okay.
Ma'am, do you have your question now with you?
I do, yeah.
It might be helpful. I might invite you to turn to page 12. Questionnaire. I just didn't call your attention to the answer that you wrote down for paragraph one, question A, how do you feel about the death penalty? Made a couple of comments in explaining it. I understood what you just explained to the judge. But in the comments, you said that you feel like it's fair when it's appropriate, but there could be other ways to punish the offender. Could you just explain a little bit more about what you were trying to convey there?
I was trying to convey that maybe if whoever was being accused of the crime had a mental instability or a mental problem, that they would benefit from being in a psychiatric hospital instead of being put to death or just putting in jail for the rest of their lives.
Okay. So, is it still fair to say that you'd be willing to listen to whatever instructions the court gave you, consider whatever facts were put in front of you, and simply apply the law to the facts and if those kinds of issues were to ever come up in the case. And that if under the facts, given the law, if some other alternative like that was an option, you follow what the judge tells you would be the options for deciding what to do with the death penalty.
I would follow the law.
You know, I don't think I have more questions.
Sure, I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for coming in and answering additional questions in this section. I'll have you return to the jury room with the bailiff, please, and then we will next call it juror 186. All right, juror number 186, thank you for returning for additional individual voir dire. In reviewing the questionnaire, I don't really believe we had issues of bias further discussed in this. Did the state have any voir dire related to bias on this juror or hardship?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
From the defense?
No, Judge.
Okay. So, juror number 186, there is one additional topic then the court will cover with you, and that's regarding responses you had on section 5 of this questionnaire, which is entitled Attitudes Regarding the Death Penalty, and that's on page 12. Do you recall thinking about those questions and answering those last week?
Yes.
And is that still the way you feel about that topic?
Yes.
All right. I am going to advise you that it may be necessary for you to make a determination in this case in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty. So you've indicated in here that generally you would support the death penalty. Is that still the way you feel today?
That I support the death penalty?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. On page 13 of a list of choices, you circled C, which reads, I generally favor the death penalty, but I would base a decision to impose it on the facts, law, and instructions in the case. You still feel that way about this topic?
Yes.
Okay. Finally, then, the question I would have is, do you believe that you would be in favor of the death penalty in every case where a murder has been committed?
If they're guilty, yes.
Okay. If you were not instructed and it was a case that didn't include that, would you follow the law?
Yes.
All right. So going back to that part C, if that were something you had to consider in this case, would you commit to following any instructions the court gave you on that topic?
Absolutely.
And if that included a potential that the death penalty was not to be imposed, would you consider that as well?
Absolutely.
All right, that will conclude the court's line of questioning on that topic. Anything from the state?
No questions from the state, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Pryor, any questions for Jury 186?
Just briefly, Judge. And again, sir, I think earlier saying there's no wrong answer. Everybody has a right to. I guess I got the impression that from the, I don't know why I got that from the questionnaire that if there was a murder and someone was convicted, you would automatically go to death.
No, I was not that if they're being tried for murder and it's a death penalty. Yes, I support it.
Okay.
Yes, is what I mean by that.
Okay. So if and I'm, this is in no way to imply that Mr. Daybell's guilty of anything.
Correct.
We have to ask these questions.
Correct.
I do appreciate that, right?
Yep.
If in fact there was a guilty verdict, are you predisposed based on your position to say, listen, I am predisposed, or I believe that if there is a murder, that it needs to be the death penalty, but I would be open to considering other options. But my initial instinct is if there is a murder here, it has to be the death penalty unless you convince me otherwise, or that I see something that gives me pause not to impose the death penalty. Would that be fair, sir?
Yes.
Okay. So in other words, at this point, your position is, and again, I want to reiterate, nobody's answer is wrong.
Correct.
And we run the gamut on this jury pool. I'm just trying to clarify, and you can appreciate that, right?
Sure.
Okay. So your position is simply that if a person has been, so I sit on the jury, if a person is found guilty of murder, my default position right off the bat is that I'm going to impose the death penalty. Unless somebody gives me a reason not to impose the death penalty.
I guess, if they're being charged for murder and death penalty is, you know, if the state's seeking death penalty, then that's what I'm looking, that's what we're going for, right?
Right. And that's what you're going to do.
So I'm going to take all the facts of the case into consideration before I decide anything.
Okay. But before you decide anything, you're initially going to say, listen, I'm in favor of the death penalty. I'm going to vote for the death penalty, but you've got to show me something. Either the prosecuting attorney or the defense attorney has got to show me something to not change my mind about imposition of the death penalty. Is that correct?
Yes.
Judge, in all respect to you, sir, I'm going to move for cause.
A response from the state.
Your Honor, may I ask some questions in aid of the prosecution?
You may.
Thank you, Your Honor. Juror 186, I think on your questionnaire you marked C, that you would potentially impose death, but you would consider other punishments.
Correct.
Is that still correct today?
Yes.
And we talked before about the recipe and following the court's instructions. Are you committed to following instructions given by the court?
Absolutely.
And would you weigh all evidence before making any decision as to guilt or any penalty?
Yes.
So your default really wouldn't be always to go to death. Would that be correct?
Correct.
Your default would be to follow the court's instruction and weigh the evidence.
Yes.
You'd be willing to impose death, but not default to that.
Yes.
Your Honor, I would object to the motion to strike for cause.
All right. The court's considered the responses here and the motion to strike. The issue the court's looking at is whether or not there's been presented an opinion that, in this case, this juror's views on the death penalty would prevent or substantially impair his ability as a juror to perform his duty in accordance with the court's instructions and the oath. I do find that he's answered that he would follow the court's instructions such that the motion to strike is overruled. And so juror number 186, that will include this section of the individual Lord Dyer, and I'll have you return to the jury room and we'll call up our next juror.
Thank you.
This will be juror number 219. All right, welcome back, juror number 219. This is the individual Lord Dyer of this juror. The court's reviewed the questionnaire. There is some indication potentially of some pretrial publicity, knowledge or information of the case, and there is not any indication of a hardship concern. So if the state would like to inquire on bias, we can begin there and then I'll hear from the defense.
Thank you, Your Honor. Juror 219, in your questionnaire, it did say on page 18, you've seen brief television coverage.
That's correct.
Is this coverage that you sought out or that you just happened to see while you were watching TV?
The latter.
And have you intentionally followed this case in any way?
No, I have not.
And I noticed you didn't say you've read about it online. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
Based on the amount of coverage you did see, you claim that you have not formed any opinion about the defendant's guilt or innocence, correct?
That's correct.
And that's still true today?
That's correct.
Your Honor, the state has no further questions about bias.
All right, Mr. Pryor.
Judge, I don't think I have any questions.
All right, thank you. The topic then the court will discuss next, juror number 219. In your questionnaire, there was a section in there, part five, it was on page 12 where we started, that it was regarding your attitudes about the death penalty. Do you remember reading through those questions and answering those questions?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and the responses you made to those questions, are those still true and accurate today?
Yes, they are.
All right. Well, the court will advise you here that it may be necessary for you to make a determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty in this case So with that in mind, you answered that when asked if you support or oppose the death penalty, you indicated you support it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And the next question I would look at was when you were given a range of choices to select from that best describe your feelings about it, you answered one that was 6C, which says, quote, "I generally favor the death penalty, but I would face a decision to impose it on the facts, law, and instructions in the case." Is that still the way you feel today?
That's correct.
Okay. And then finally, let me just inquire then, would you be in favor of the imposition of the death penalty as a punishment in every case where a murder has been committed?
I believe that I think the cases are individual, and the decision to impose the death penalty would depend on the individual case.
Okay, so if in this particular case certain instructions were given, either that you had to consider it or were not to consider it, would you follow those instructions regardless?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so despite any personal view you may have, you would commit to following the court's instructions as they would relate to that portion of this case if that were to occur?
Yes.
All right, that will conclude the court's voir dire on that topic with Juror 219, the voir dire from the state.
Not at this time, Your Honor.
From the defense.
Yes, Juror number 219.
Microphone, please, Mr. Pryor. Thank you.
Juror number 219. When I had all of you folks there, I talked about there's no right or wrong answer. I'm repeating that to almost every other juror that comes in. And there is no right or wrong answer. It's everybody's individual personal beliefs, right?
Yes.
And when the judge asked you, in every murder case, would you impose the death penalty? Your answer was no. Every case is individual and different.
That's correct.
Is there a line on the types of cases where you say, you know, there is no situation? I mean, for example, if we were in a war and there was a mass genocide and the soldiers decided to wipe a number of Americans out, that's obviously a very extreme case. Would you agree?
I would agree that that's an extreme case. I believe what you're trying to get at is, you know, there's black and white and there's a whole lot of gray.
Okay, that's really what I'm trying to get at. And there, when you're talking about the death penalty, whether to or not to impose it, it's that gray area there, correct?
Yes.
And when you look at your questionnaire, you mark number C. Did you contemplate possibly marking number D when you were going to mark that?
I'm sorry, could you read that for me?
Well, under number C on page 13, do you have your questionnaire with you?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and you circled number C for that?
I'm getting there.
That's okay, we're fine.
And your question is whether I considered...
Did you consider C or D, or were you a pretty strong B?
I would say pretty strong C.
Okay. And again, is there a line that's drawn in terms of what is an automatic that prompts you to say, you know what, there's no discussion here, it's going to be the death before you make a decision? Is there a line in the sand that says, these are the cases that I absolutely have to impose the death?
I don't have that line in mind.
Okay. Are there cases that involve children that potentially cause you to want to impose the death?
As I said before, there's a whole lot of gray.
Okay. And I appreciate it. And again, there's no right or wrong answer. Based on your questionnaire, I was just trying to clarify where your position was. Okay?
Yes.
And thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Judge, I have nothing else. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Juror 219, that'll conclude the individual voir dire. You'll return to the jury room, please, with the bailiff, and we will next bring in Juror 321.
Judge, I have 296. I'm sorry.
All right, thank you. I was out of order there. It's 296. All right, welcome back for individual voir dire, juror number 296. I'll just allow the state to proceed and then the defense. There was some knowledge this juror had of this case potentially from media coverage, and she did address some concerns about school classes, but I think those have been talked through. However, if you wish to inquire again, you may. So with the state, who's going to conduct this voir dire?
That would be me, Your Honor.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Hi. So I want to just briefly follow back up on your class schedule.
Mm-hmm.
You had indicated on your questionnaire that you have a Monday, Wednesday class and that you would be able to take those classes online. So you're sure that you'd be able to do that?
Or I am not sure, but I believe I could because they are classes that are also.
They're hybrid?
Yeah.
Okay. What would happen if you were to learn that you weren't able to take those classes online? Would there be other accommodations that you could make for your schooling or?
I believe I could withdraw from it as well.
Okay. And would that cause you a hardship to have to withdraw from that course?
No.
Okay. Thank you so much. I want to talk briefly about media exposure in this case. So on your questionnaire, you had mentioned that you had seen the news. You've seen some stuff on social media, Instagram, as well as some podcasts. Which podcast did you listen to?
I don't think it was podcasts. I think it was YouTube, but I've watched a couple different, like Danny Elise. That's the only one that comes to mind that I watched. But I haven't watched or seen any of that probably in like a year or
okay.
so, maybe okay. even longer.
All right.
I actually kind of forgot.
You had indicated that you have not formed an opinion on Mr. Daybell's guilt. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. You did mention one thing, which is that you realize something could be effective. You understand that there could be more to this than what's in the media.
Yes.
And you had indicated that you were unaware of Chad and his representatives or representations and views. So one thing that you're going to be instructed during this trial is that the state has the entire burden of proof and Mr. Davo doesn't have to testify at all. Is that something that would bother you?
No.
Okay. Are you comfortable with the fact that Mr. Davo is entitled to a presumption of innocence until the state meets its burden of proof?
Yes.
Okay. And would you be able to set aside what you have heard and read about in the media and start this case with a clean slate and listen to the evidence as it's presented and follow the court's instructions?
Yes, I believe so.
Thank you so much, ma'am. I have no further questions.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Beatty, Mr. Pryor.
Ma'am, I noticed a remark on the questionnaire.
Microphone, Ms. Pryor. Thank you.
That's giving me a hard lesson, I think. And I want to return you to page 12 of your questionnaire, if you would.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yes.
And in the middle of the page, it has a comment that says, how do you feel about the death penalty? Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
And then would you mind reading your response?
I'm either for or against the death penalty.
Okay. Is that what your position is?
Yes.
Okay. So when you marked on your questionnaire that you favor the death penalty, with an explanation, you're, and I don't want to put words in, again, there's no right or wrong answer. We know that, right? There's no right or wrong.
Yes.
Are you neutral on the death penalty, or are you really in favor of the death penalty? Could you clarify for me?
I would say I'm neutral. I think it's a circumstantial situation. And,
okay.
I can't say that I fully believe in the death penalty, but I also don't not believe in the death penalty.
Okay, so.
And Mr. Pryor, on this point, the court's going to go through a litany on the death penalty part of the questionnaire in a moment. If we could set that aside, and I don't know if you have any questions about bias or hardship before we move on to that topic.
Okay, and I apologize, Judge, I'm jumping the gun. I don't have anything in terms of the bias, Judge. Well,
okay, thank you. So back to the topic then that Mr. Pryor was just addressing with you. You did complete and fill out a section of your questionnaire called Attitudes Regarding the Death Penalty. Do you recall that?
Yes.
And are the answers you listed in there still true and accurate today?
Yes,
All right, I am going to advise you that it may be necessary for you to make a determination in regard to the imposition of the death penalty or some other penalty in this case. And that's why we are delving into these questions at this time. You did make that explanation just now on the record. So you are what you call neutral on that. This Part C you answered again on page 13. You had a list of choices about it and what you thought best represented how you feel. You said, I generally favor the death penalty, but would base a decision to impose it on the facts, law, and instructions in the case. Is that still what you think is your view of the death penalty today?
For these statements, yes.
Okay. If you were required to consider that, do you believe that the death penalty should be, would you be in favor of it in every case where a murder has been committed?
Yeah.
Okay, so would you be willing to follow any instructions the court gave you in this case, including if that were an instruction that involved considering the death penalty as a punishment or another punishment?
Yes.
Okay, so would you be able to set aside any views you have on the issue and follow the court's instructions, whether it was to consider that or not, the death penalty?
Yes.
All right, that concludes the court's voir dire questioning of this juror on that topic. Does the state have any questions on that?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
All right, and Ms. Pryor, you can return to your questioning on that as well.
Judge, I think she answered my questions. Appreciate it. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, that'll conclude your individual voir dire. You can be excused back to the jury room and should be getting more information shortly, and then we will have our next juror return here for individual 321.
Now, may I inquire whether retrieving juror 321?
Yes.
Judge, on this one, I didn't ask questions. I would be staying on the record all. Questions? You know, the questions related to AA's responses on page 9. 7 and 8, and they're of a personal nature. I didn't know if these were of such a personal nature, or if I give you more privacy or doing now, or if I'm open to ask these questions.
Why don't you?
I'm getting too quiet.
Sorry.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.